Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
To me, I love normally traveling in developing countries because they're so different than our culture. And that's what really inspires me to travel in general, is like just the curiosity about culture. But on the other spectrum, you know, of developing countries, there's Japan, which I said is like this utopia of technology. And it's just as fascinating to me because it's so vastly different than what we're used to.
Welcome to Jump Podcast, formerly known as the Budget Minded Traveler. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and get out and see the world. Let this show be a source of travel advice and inspiration, but remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. Hey guys, welcome back to Jump. Thanks for tuning in today, wherever you are in the world. I'm wondering if some of you already know our guest today. I'm inviting the one and only Sherry Ott to join us. Sherry runs a travel blog called Ott's World. Her last name is Ott, O-T-T, Ott's World. And she's been doing it for well over a decade now. So chances are you may know her or have come across her stuff in the past. She is also Ott's World on Instagram. And she's a photographer and she travels constantly. And she's a friend of mine, so she is a fun one to follow on the interwebs if you want to check out her stuff. She is also a wealth of knowledge when it comes to hiking and long distance trails. She actually did the Camino de Santiago years ago. And as soon as she finished, she decided she needed to do more trips and trails like that. So she has spent a lot of her travels seeking them out, which is why we get to have her here today. She actually just got back from Japan, where she did a pilgrimage called the Kumano Kodo Trail. I don't know if you guys have heard of that one before, but she is going to take us there and tell us everything we need to know about the Kumano Kodo Trail. And definitely stick around because I have a very, very special bonus for you at the end of this episode. So if you are interested in hiking the Kumano Kodo Trail or are heading to Japan soon, you'll want to hear that part for sure. So make sure you listen all the way to the end for that. This episode is brought to you by Escape Campervans. These guys are the largest campervan rental company in North America. They have over 600 vans in 12 depot stations across the country, which gives you the option of a round trip or a one-way rental, allowing you to do an epic point-to-point road trip. Think about these for hitting a festival or needing a place to sleep or picking one up for the weekend or perhaps taking it on a camping road trip where you'd rather not sleep on the ground. They're all equipped with queen-size beds, kitchens with sinks, stoves, fridges, and they offer bedding and kitchen supply kits to rent so you don't have to pack all that gear yourself. And since they're vans, they get better gas mileage and are far less cumbersome than big RVs. Rentals start at just $37 a day in low season, and it gets better because they're offering us a 10% discount. So just go to escapecampervans.com/jump and enter the promo code JUMP10 to get your discount. And then come find me on Instagram and tell me where you're taking your van because I would love to hear about your adventures. Our other supporting partner for today's episode is CashSwap. CashSwap is the app that makes foreign currency exchange 100% free. How? By swapping out your currency directly with other travelers at airports. You simply open up the app, enter the currency you want to swap out and the currency you need, and then you can see who's there to connect and swap with. The exchange rates are calculated in real time with no fees, and you instantly get to see how much you're saving on every transaction by not using a money exchange desk. And we're all fans of safety here, and so is CashSwap. That's why they require every member to provide a real photo of themselves for their profiles. Members can be rated by other members. Communication happens directly through the app, so there's no exchange of personal information. And keep in mind, CashSwap was purposely designed to only function within airports, which already have security protocols in place. So it's pretty straightforward. Travel, connect, swap, and save. Go to cashswapapp.com to learn more or download it on Google Play. iPhone users, hang tight, keep an eye out. They hope to be on iOS soon. Okay, I am excited for this. Let's get Sherry on here and transport our minds to Japan and the Kumano-Kodo Trail. All right, I am here with Sherry Ott, who just got back. Actually, I think I probably woke her up with this call this morning from Japan. So, Sherry, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great, albeit a little jet lagged.
Yeah.
I did just get in late last night, and I'd been in Japan for 3 weeks. So it's going to be a little bit of a shock to the system for the next few days.
Yeah, I bet. I love it. We get you like fresh off the plane, like your head probably hasn't even had time to process everything that you just went through. And we're going to go there anyway.
Well, good. As long as you know that. But yes, I'm good to go. I was wondering where my miso soup was this morning. I didn't have any. I missed it.
Did you have that like every day?
Yeah, Japanese breakfast, always miso soup, normally some fish, various other things that I had no idea what it was. But yeah, I got used to that.
Wow, that's so cool. So you were there for 3 weeks, and that is what we are here to talk about, of course. So I guess we can get right into it. You did a portion of, it's just a portion that you did of the Kumano-Kodo, right?
Well, it's a good question, because what I did was the Kumano-Kodo, and it's unlike like a regular pilgrimage route where you have a very specific beginning and ending. It's a little bit more, what do I want to say, haphazard than that.
Okay.
But yes, I did 5 days of it, basically, went from one place to and finished at a temple, but there were a few times where I had to take buses in order to kind of make that work. But did the pilgrimage. I technically got the status of a pilgrim, a Kumano-Kodo pilgrim. And there are longer routes. There's about 7 routes that you can do on the Kumano-Kodo.
Okay, so let's start with the first question, which is what is the Kumano-Kodo? Like, you have already mentioned that it's a pilgrimage.
Uh-huh.
This is, we did talk a few episodes back about the Camino de Santiago in Spain being a pilgrimage. So maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about what the Kumano-Kodo Trail actually is.
Yes. I wish I could say I fully understood it, but it's something very different. It is a pilgrimage, but it's not a Christian pilgrimage. It's an ancient pilgrimage from the 11th century in which basically people from all walks of life, from emperor to samurai to just regular people, used to complete. And I shouldn't even say complete. They used to walk in this area. So it was considered the key peninsula, which is south of Osaka. It's one of the biggest peninsulas in Japan, is the area for the Kumano hikes. And Kii, actually means tree. Okay. And this whole area is filled with mountains and trees.
Sounds beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's just green trees everywhere. But this was an area where people used to come to kind of cleanse themselves in a way. It was a process of purification and praying and kind of becoming one with nature. So, you know, whereas the Camino de Santiago is this whole process of walking to the end and basically being forgiven of your sins, getting the Compostela, the Kumano-Kodo isn't quite as clear as that, but it is this idea of pilgrimaging through these kind of sacred mountains to there's 3 different sacred shrines that you can attend or go to. And it's a process of purification and getting closer to nature. So that's what it is from a historical standpoint. Now it has developed into these kind of seven routes. And it also, I can't remember what year it was, but it achieved UNESCO World Heritage status a few years ago. And it is the only other pilgrimage route, basically, that has achieved UNESCO status in addition to the Camino de Santiago. So that's why lots of times they're talked about together.
Okay.
As kind of sister pilgrimages.
Okay. Yeah, you did mention that earlier. So that does make sense. Okay.
Yeah. But they're two very different religions. So the other thing is the Japanese basically practice Buddhism and Shintoism, which are their two religions. And what the Kumano Kodo, or what this area did, was kind of bring the two together and intermix them. So it is spiritual, definitely spiritual, but it's just, it's not like the Christianity that many Americans are used to.
Yeah. Okay. So do you know, I have two questions to follow that up. Do you know approximately, like, is it pretty touristy, or do you know? Well, that's a hard question too, because there are multiple different routes, I suppose. But I mean, I know that it's not as popular as the Camino. We can start with that.
Not at all.
Yeah. So did you see a lot of people when you were out there? I mean, who knows about this, and who's going to do this? Hikers? Or do you think people are there to actually respect the reason it's there and go to, like, kind of cleanse and do like the nature thing? What do you think about that?
It depends. So as far as the reason people are there, it depends. I would say the few Japanese people that I met along the trail, it was a little bit more of a, maybe kind of a spiritual journey for them. Whereas all of kind of the Westerners, the Western Europeans, Americans, are probably there mainly to hike. And a lot of people, I have a feeling, are there who have walked the Camino de Santiago and are looking for other pilgrimages to do, which is what really brought me there too. So as far as how many people, it's a good question. I actually asked one of the big providers there that I worked with, Oku Japan, if they had any stats on the number of people who finished, or, you know, but like I said, it's not a real clear cut start and finish. So it's hard to say, and they didn't have any numbers, nor did the tourism board really, any real good numbers that they could share with me, sadly. But from my experience, no, there were not a lot of people at all. On average, like, I did count one day. It was a full day of hiking for me. I think it was only like, it's a little over 6 miles, but it was a long day because it was up and down through these mountains. I walked solo, but in that day, I saw only, I think it was 10 other groups of people. And that mainly consisted of couples. There was maybe two out of those 10 that was bigger groups that were hiking together, let's say 10 or more, or let's say 10, probably 10 people. And then there were very few solo hikers too. I mean, I maybe ran across two other solo hikers. So I thought that was really interesting. Most of the time I was out there hiking, I was pretty much felt completely alone. So in that way, it's nothing, in many ways, actually, it's nothing like the Camino. To me, the only thing that the Camino and this pilgrimage, the Kumano Kodo, have in common are the UNESCO status. Otherwise, which, they're two very different things.
Okay. Yeah. That pretty much means it's exactly like, totally different from the Camino. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, and they're both pilgrimages, you know, but the religion is different, but the type of pilgrimage is very, very different. The one thing also to know is, because it's just gaining popularity, there, the infrastructure around it is not there yet. And I don't know that it'll ever get there, as far as like the Camino de Santiago, which has so much infrastructure around it in the sense of like lodging, restaurants, you know, services for the pilgrims. This is very much restricted because the places where you go, the villages are small and there's not a lot of lodging options. So it's kind of self-restricted by the fact that there's nowhere to stay if you don't book early enough or if you don't organize it. It's not the type of trail, at least during the higher seasons. Probably in the winter, this would be okay. But anything other than winter, it's not the kind of trail where you just walk and hope to find a place to stay when you're done walking.
Right. And apparently apparently you can do that on the Camino, like depending on the season.
Totally. Yeah. That's what I did the whole way through.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so let's be clear about the timing. You, this is June right now. Mm-hmm. And so you were there walking the trail at the end of May. The last week of May.
Mm-hmm.
And that was shoulder season, or do you think that was tourist season getting into it?
It's, you know, I would say it's kind of on the, it's near shoulder season, because June is considered rainy season for Japan.
Oh, okay.
So most people had told me, had suggested that I, you know, get as much, but, you know, don't really come too much in June. Maybe beginning of June is okay. But the other thing that you have to think about, and this is, I think Oku really helped me with this too, is I was going to go at the beginning of May, and they're like, no, don't even bother, because it's Golden Week in Japan, which is like a week-long holiday. And they're like, don't even bother coming then, because it would be a mess. So that's why I moved it to later in May. I think, but I of course don't know because I didn't do it, I personally think the best times to go would be early spring, like say March, April.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably fall, let's say September, October, November. I think the summer would be pretty warm and you'd contend with rain, a lot more rain probably in June and part of July.
Okay. That's good intel. And if you go in the spring, that's cherry blossom season,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Now, granted, you are walking mainly not through cherry trees. You're walking through Japanese cedar,
mm-hmm.
but still, it would be beautiful. It's a good time to be in Japan regardless.
Right. Yeah. You can go to Kyoto, and see the cherry blossoms there.
Yes. Do that first so you can see all the crowds and then escape to the Kii Peninsula and forest bathe in the mountains.
That's Yay. Yeah. So you mentioned that you did it solo, but you did go with Oku. So Did they provide, was it easy to follow the path, or were there signs along the way? Did they have to give you instructions? I'm thinking back to when I went on my bike tours and we had to follow the directions. Otherwise we would have been lost, but in a place I don't know, the W, for example, in Torres del Paine, you can't really get lost there. It's pretty easy to follow. So how was it in Japan?
And I've done the W. So yes, I would say it was more like the W. You really can't get lost.
Okay.
However, yes, I went with Oku. Oku provides a self-guided option mm-hmm. where they help you set up. They basically help you kind of figure out how many days you're going to be there and the route that you want to take. They help you set up all the lodging, any food that kind of goes along with the lodging. And they do give you a ton of information on maps and how to get to the trailheads. And then there are a lot of places too, where, like I said, unlike the Camino, where you do sometimes have to take a bus or some kind of public transportation to get to the next place. And they help you organize all of that. Now, mm-hmm. I'll be very honest. I freaked out when I got their big packet of information and I started reading through it, of course, at the last minute, because I do everything last minute. So the week before I'm supposed to go, I'm reading through all of this stuff about every day and all these detailed things about the trail and the maps and all this stuff. And I kind of freaked out because I'm like, oh my God, this is so much harder than I thought it was going to be. And I'm imagining myself getting lost and, walking alone and all this stuff. And I actually wrote them and I'm like, wow, this seems really complicated. And they're like, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And so I get there and it wasn't complicated at all. What I learned to do from the logistics stuff that they sent me was not really too much, not worry too much about it, but only read one day at a time.
Mm.
what do I have to do tomorrow? Oh, I have to get up and I have to catch this bus and, whatever, or I'm walking this route. And day by day, it's really easy. And I didn't even open their maps when I was on the trail. So that's how easy it was when we're on the trail.
Okay.
I don't, maybe only can I think of two times that in my head I thought, I hope I'm on the right trail. Did I miss something?
Yeah.
Two times in 5 days, that's not bad when you're hiking.
No kidding.
And it wasn't because, you know, I was following other people or that was really evident because no, I didn't. Most of the time I felt like I was alone. I didn't see people, but it was just that well marked because the woods are so thick that the trail through there is very obvious.
Okay. Yeah. Did you use, so you didn't use their maps. Did you ever like pull out your phone or anything to make sure you were on the right way? Like did you, or was it just that simple?
Probably in the 5 days, I pulled out my phone twice to make sure I was, but honestly, it was more of a, it wasn't even to see that I was on the right track. It was more to go, how close am I to the, how far, you know, how far am I from this town from a like GPS standpoint?
Okay. Right.
It was really just that. Otherwise it was really easy. And the marking, they do a really good job of maintaining the trails and the trail building. There were a number of times where I'm like, damn, this is really good trail building. Like, you know, you can appreciate how hard it is to build and maintain trails and they do a nice job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then since you were alone, I have to ask the obligatory solo female travel safety question. Was there any time that you felt unsafe or were you chilling?
Never. Yay. Felt unsafe. Yeah.
My favorite answer.
Yeah, exactly. And granted, I've traveled a lot of places solo, so I probably have a higher tolerance. But I mean, I honestly think that anyone could go there and feel safe. Now, they may not feel, I know plenty of, you know, especially solo women who might not feel comfortable hiking in the woods by themselves. They maybe they would freak out about that because like I said, you don't always see other people. It was safe. It was definitely safe. Okay. And even along the route, they always had every half kilometer, they had a sign with numbers. So you could kind of see how, you know, far you've gone and so on. And on that sign, there were always emergency numbers and stuff like that too.
Wow. So how thorough.
Yeah. Like I said, it was, well, it's Japanese. Everything is, that's the one thing I learned in the 3 weeks I was there. Everything is perfect. It is perfect. I swear to God, I wouldn't have been surprised if they were out sweeping the trail.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Everything is so perfect there and so well marked. Yeah. And that's the other thing to know about the safety aspect. So just being in Japan for 3 weeks, like it is really one of the most safest countries I've ever been in where like, I didn't worry about pickpockets. You don't worry about any of that. Like people on the subway in Tokyo, they put their briefcases and stuff just like up on a shelf above them where, you know, I used to live in New York for a while and I looked at that and went, anyone could take that and just run out.
Yeah.
But no, it made me kind of lazy a little bit. I have to admit because I wasn't normally as diligent as I would be in some respects, but it's a very safe country to travel in.
Yeah. Lock that up before you go on your next trip. get back in the habit of looking over your shoulder or whatever. Yeah. No, no, that's really cool to hear. Along the lines of signage and stuff like that along the trail, going back to the idea that this is for kind of a spiritual journey, you know, and that there are shrines here and there, and there are, I'm sure there are certain, you know, specific things along the way that you're meant to, I don't know, stop and hang out for a bit or something. Do they have, is it like, for someone who does go alone, do you get insight? Because basically, when you don't have a guide telling you these things, how do you find this out on your own? Like, do you have to do research? Because I don't love doing research, but if something's right in front of me, and says like, this is what this is for, like, this is what this area is meant to be or whatever. Like, was it in that respect, was it easy to understand the kind of environment you were in?
Well, I would say I'm like you. I don't do any research before I go typically. Yeah. So like when I took off on that first day and made my way from Osaka down to the trailhead, I had no idea what I was doing or what this was all about. And I learned along the way, but you know, I would say the signage there is good, but it's not necessarily explaining the whole thing. So what I found that I had to do was, you know, I hopped on the Oku website a number of times to get some clarity on a few things. You talk to people as you go, you learn things as you go in that way more than I would say like signage would help. Mm. Now, one thing to know is there are three what they call kind of sacred shrines. And like the route that I went, I hiked to two of them and then I visited the third one by other transportation. But okay. There are three sacred shrines that are big shrines and they all have different kind of reasons why they're there. And then all along the way, though, this whole route are what they call OGs, O-J-I. And OGs are like little shrines, tiny little shrines, sometimes, well, sometimes bigger, like little huts, or sometimes it's just a rock, you know, that's carved. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind those is people in ancient times, as well as now, stop and do their prayers and sometimes purification if that's available, you know, so there's all these little things along the way. And at each one of those, there was normally a sign and it would have the name of the OG shrine and a little bit about it, but it was pretty limited, I would say. Also, the importance of those shrines for people who might not be so spiritual is there was always a little cute little wooden, what I called house, you know, bigger than a birdhouse, but not much, twice the size of a birdhouse, that housed the stamps and ink. Oh. So much like you have a Camino de Santiago pilgrim passport, you have a passport also for this that you can pick up at the tourism center before you start. And then you stamp your passport at the little OGs all along the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it was, even the OG stamp houses were perfect. It was ridiculous.
Like they didn't run out of ink?
No, there was never a time where there wasn't a stamp or there was, you know, the ink pad. They ask you, like, it had a little door, a spring-loaded door, and you'd open it up and there's the little ink pads in there. And they had the door on there because, of course, they didn't want the little stamp thing to, you know, to dry out of ink or, yeah. You know, like, oh my God.
Wow. That sounds like fairy tale land.
It is. I kept on calling Japan in general a like utopia, like a sci-fi utopia country. It is. It's so crazy. Having traveled throughout the rest and lived in parts of Asia, it's really nothing like any other part of Asia. So.
Or the rest of the world, maybe.
Or that too. Yes, yeah. I know.
I keep hearing, recently, especially living in Montana, there's like a mass exodus in fact, I almost just said this instead of January, they call it Japanuary because everybody like leaves Montana to go ski in Japan. And I just keep hearing more and more and more about Japan these days, that's why we're doing this episode actually, really, because it's just piqued my interest so much. And that is one of the things I hear no matter what is like how proper and like perfect everything is there. And I've never been there. And so all I can do is ask and imagine, you know?
Yeah, it'll blow your mind. Like to me, I love normally traveling in developing countries because they're so different than our culture. And that's what really inspires me to travel in general is like just the curiosity about culture. But on the other spectrum, you know, of developing countries, there's Japan, which I said is like this utopia of technology, and it's just as fascinating to me because it's so vastly different than what we're used to. Mm-hmm. And there's so many cultural differences, more so than even, you know, the Camino de Santiago. If I think, you know, you're hiking through Spain, people are somewhat familiar with Europe. But part of this too, part of the fun of the Kamanu Kodo to me is you're staying in, you know, people's homes or these traditional Japanese inns, which are so different than anything you experienced in other parts of the world. And you really do, like, to me, I think you get a little bit more exposed to the culture on this because you are staying in these much smaller lodges and stuff like that and eating in smaller places.
That is so important. And I actually would love to talk a little bit more about that because in fact, if you wouldn't mind just like describing a couple of the places where you stayed and who you came into contact there, because one of the reasons that I love having a guide really is because I feel like I learn so, not I feel like, I do. I learn way more about where I am what I have learned is the importance of that. In a trip, you know, like don't just come and see and be like, oh, that's pretty. Like, what is that here for? And like, why are you here? You know? And so I love having the guide because I feel like I take so much more appreciation for the place away from it. Uh-huh. You know, even if I just visit a city and then do a guided walking tour, I'm also a big fan of those. Just like the free guided walking tour in a city, because how many things are we looking at that we miss the meaning of it or we walk right by because we don't realize it's there. And so I love that you said you stayed in homestays and like, what was the cultural impact? Like, what did you learn? What did you see? What were the places like?
Well, and I would say also, I'm like you, I normally do hike with guides. So this was kind of a flashback for me from how I used to travel more.
Yeah.
This was just completely solo and out hiking or whatever. And, you know, it was different in that sense. But one of the things that I kind of also learned to do was jot down the millions of questions I would have about things along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, why this, what's this, what does this mean, whatever. And then when I did get to someplace, you know, in the evening or whatever, I had questions I could ask people and try to slowly piece together this puzzle of culture. Yeah. And so the types of places I stayed, oh my God, they were so cute. Like the first night I stayed at, actually it was someone's house. I mean, you'd call it a guest house, but this was really just someone's house, like an Airbnb in a way. But Ya'e-san, that was her name. Her children were older and out of the house, so they rented out their, I think, extra two bedrooms. So only two bedrooms, you know, would be filled. And I happened to be the only person there that night. And she cooked for you. She made dinner and made breakfast, and then sent me with a little lunchbox, you know, for the next day. I know. They call it snack lunch, which I think is really cute.
Snack lunch.
Snack lunch.
What was in your snack lunch?
Oh my God. Every day it was like, what is this?
You can't tell me.
I don't know. I have no idea what I ate most of the time.
Was it colorful?
80% of the time I had no idea what I was eating, but I'd eat it. Yeah. A lot of it, actually, the real important stuff was lots of times you would just get these like rice balls with a little bit of, it would just be, you know, Japanese rice with maybe some wasabi flakes or seaweed flakes, or sometimes they'd be wrapped in seaweed, but you know, like instant carbs basically, which was good. You needed that. And then lots of times you'd get a little piece of fish, maybe a little piece of chicken, but lots of rice. That was like the fuel and the, you know, But that was fine. I also brought some Clif Bars and stuff like that. But I mainly, you get so much food on this route.
Really?
Yeah, you do. Like, oh my God, there was never a time where I was hungry. That's for sure.
That's good to know.
So sometimes you stayed in little guest houses like I did with her.
Do they speak English?
She did.
Okay.
So I would say like, Oku does a nice job of the places they normally work with. And especially if it's a small little place like that, they'll make sure that they speak English, you know? So yes, Ya'e-san did speak English and she had really good English too. It was awesome. And she had a really fascinating past and she had done a lot of travel. So that was really cool.
So you obviously spent a lot of time talking to her, which is cool.
I did. Well, I was the only one there. It was me and her at her house.
Yay. That's cool.
She was an awesome cook. Oh, the food was amazing. And she had a big garden and everything she cooked was kind of from her garden. So we went out and looked at that and stuff like that. And then the next night, let me think. Oh, this was different. So Oku is one of, they say they're the only company that does like, you know, that services the Kumanu Kodo that has an office right on the trail. And they do. And that night I actually stayed in their office. Now, I don't think that that's a normal place that they put people up, but I could be wrong. I think the town that I was in that night was pretty booked up. Oh. And I think that's kind of one of their, you know, options is you can stay there, but it's an old, Japanese wooden home. So it was the traditional house kind of behind the office part. There was this traditional house with the, you know, the little mats and, you know, a futon on the floor and everything's on the floor. There's nothing really, you know, and, so it was a really cool place to stay.
Oh, cool.
With, you know, the little sliding doors and all that kind of stuff. So that
you know
was
what?
Neat.
I feel like I saw a picture of, did I maybe see a picture of that on your Instagram?
Did you
post that somewhere? I feel like I can picture it. I was following your whole trek on Instagram. So there were lots and lots of pictures.
Yes, did I know we, I put it on Instagram stories.
Yeah. Did we mention that Sherry's a photographer? Ottsworld, yeah, at Ottsworld. Yeah.
And then the next night I was at a traditional, also a traditional Japanese inn, a ryokan is what you'd call it. And the ryokans are the ones with the mats, what's it called? Tatami mats, but they're a special mat and, you know, the little 2-inch futon on the floor and that kind of stuff. And that was a really neat place. I was there at an onsen. That was a little higher end place.
Yeah. Let's explain real quick what an onsen is, because that word is all over the place once you start talking about Japan. And like, we don't know what that means unless you explain it. So what is an onsen?
It might freak you out, but I loved it. Public bathing. It's a public bath.
Yeah, there you go. Like a hot spring.
So,
but
yes. Yeah. But, and yes, most of them are hot springs, but just even the way that the Japanese culture, this is going to sound weird, bathes is so different than how we think about it. So even, let me just say, even in the guest houses, they would draw a bath for me.
Oh, that sounds nice.
A hot, hot, hot bath. And it had a little cover on it that you could roll back so that it would keep it at this very specific temperature.
Sounds dreamy.
And much like an onsen, when you go in a hot spring, mm-hmm. and you, there's a lot of rules around it, but you bathe, you shower basically before you get into the bath. So you get into the bath clean into this hot water and kind of soak for a while. Mm-hmm. So that might be a bath in someone's guest house, or it might be an actual onsen, a hot spring. So every night I was in hot water, which completely sapped me though. I just there was one night where I came back to my little room and my mats, and you know, there's no place to sit. So, and they don't put out your futon until you go to dinner. So I honestly, I was just so dead from hiking. And then this onsen sit, I'm like, I just laid on my mats on the floor
yeah.
for probably a half an hour. I'm like, oh my God, I can't move.
Nice.
But it was great. So the onsen stuff too, the things to know is, yes, you shower beforehand and you shower typically in public. It's a little, I mean, I shouldn't say, well, it is public, but it's separated by men and women. mm-hmm. And then you get into the onsen. And one of the rules is you have to be completely nude. You cannot wear anything mm-hmm. in that onsen or in the public bath.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's because, like I said, their idea of bathing is that you do that when you're clean. So it's very specific that you can't wear anything in there. Mm-hmm. And some people kind of freak out about it. It didn't bother me, but you know,
yeah.
Just so.
I do want to add to that right now, because actually my brother and his wife, who you guys just heard a couple episodes ago talking about her Knowles experiences, they actually just also did this for their honeymoon. And that was a question for them, was like, were they going to get to go in the hot springs together ever, you know, like as a couple? And so I just do want to say that there are certain specific places where you can have private onsens, like
yes.
for male and female. Did you ever see those? Like, were you ever?
Oh, yeah. Some of the places I stayed had that.
Yeah.
And you just had to basically reserve them in advance.
There you go. Yeah.
The other thing is, like, the place where I stayed, one of the places where I stayed in kind of this bigger luxury ryokan, the river, which was the hot spring river, was running right outside of there. So if you didn't want to go into their kind of indoor onsens, you could just, you know, sit in a swimming suit or jog bra and pants or whatever, shorts, mm-hmm. and sit in the river. And lots of people mm-hmm. did that too.
Cool.
So that was a way more kind of social aspect to kind of more typical of how we hot spring, I suppose, at least in Colorado.
Yeah.
But yeah. So there are options. Not all places are, you know, along the river.
Yeah.
So, but I did have some places like that. And if you want to do that, if you want to experience that, you just, you know, you would tell Oku and they can set all that up.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't even remember. We were talking about
the places you were staying and the guest houses and the people you were meeting and all of that. Just
yeah. So all of them were a little different, different sizes, different feelings, but most of the places, except for kind of that bigger ryokan, you know, I didn't have a lot of exposure to talk to a lot of people there. Because, you know, I find the bigger places you stay, the less social they are, you know, which is weird. But I did have plenty of opportunities, though, to talk to people otherwise. And there were even a few times where, oh, my God, it was so cute. There was this Japanese group, probably about 12 people or so, that I was passing. And these two older Japanese women were in the back, and we were getting ready to go up this, you know, switchback pass. And they were stopping, and I said hello to them, and they gave me chocolate before I went up the pass. And it was so cute, and we kind of started talking. They had a guide so he could translate, and they were going to be doing the Camino de Santiago later in the year.
What?
We started talking. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
They're like 74. They were super cute. And they were just slow and steady. They were awesome. And then the woman gets out of her bag. She's like, wait, wait. She gets out of her bag, this beautiful little like silk purse, like tiny, that would kind of go with a kimono. And she gives it to me and as a gift.
Wow.
Like chocolate wasn't enough.
What? You're like, I'm not worthy.
It's true Japanese form. Like I said, perfection.
You know,
she pulls it out and she's like, wait, and she pulls out like three others. So I get to choose my pattern.
Oh my gosh.
So I choose a pattern. And then she pulls out these little individual, like plastic bag that she puts it in and like folds it all up and gives it to me. And I'm like, oh my God, this
is in the middle
of the woods.
What?
So they were super nice. So, you know, I even got I even got some exposure and got to talk to some of those groups too, as I walked by, or maybe we met at a shrine or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of opportunity to kind of learn along the way. But my best advice there, though, is you're going to see a million things that you're going to have questions about, and write them down and then ask when you get to someone that is, you know, comfortable speaking English and can give you that information.
Yeah, that is really good advice, because then you still, you know, it's a conversation starter. You get to meet people and you're learning along the way, especially if you're solo. So, yeah.
Oh. And there are so many questions. Like, I can't even tell you.
Oh, man, I bet. I like just am trying to imagine this. It just sounds amazing and otherworldly to me.
It is. And it's a good, you know, it's a proper hike. I mean, that's the other thing to know. Different from I did the whole Camino de Santiago. It is a walk. I say the Camino Codo is a hike. It is a proper hike. I wouldn't want to do it without hiking boots, yet there were some people that did, you know, just did it in running shoes or trail running shoes. I wouldn't want to do it without poles. There were younger people with better knees than me that did, I suppose. But this was hard. Like, I was spent every day. And then you'd have to get up and do it again.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Way, way more strenuous and difficult than the Camino de Santiago, by far.
Yeah.
Something that you should probably train for, which I didn't.
So, that's really good advice. Do you know what the total was that you hiked?
Yes, I do. So I did, wait a minute, look at this. I did actually write it down. So I did about 27.6 miles on the trail, on the actual, what they would call the Nacogdoches route trail. And then I did an extra day where I hiked with a monk that was another 6 miles. So
on top
of that. I did about 33 and a half miles in five days.
Okay.
But it was proper, like, it wasn't ever altitude. You don't have to deal with altitude. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like that last day, it really killed me, actually. It was 9 miles, I think. And you had a 2,600 foot climb in the first 2.5 miles.
Wow.
So I basically spent 3 hours just going up.
Straight up. Switchbacks. Yeah. Wow.
It was just stairs. Up and up and up. Yeah. Yeah. And then I was so happy when I finally got to the top. I was practicing this because the prior day I had went out with the monk. So I was practicing the tips he had given me about like kind of walking and meditation, which worked about 75% of the way up. And then I gave up and started cussing probably. but I got to the top and I'm like, oh, thank God, it's all, you know, going to be easy from now on. For the rest of the, you know, hike. And then I got up to the kind of the top kind of viewing point. And then it was all down the last really mile and a half. And it was these stairs that were just punishing because it was it was stone stairs. So it just, it's not great for knees.
Right.
But it was, I was so sick of stairs by the time I got to that last temple.
Oh, I don't blame you.
So, you know, definitely proper hiking. Lots of roots, tree roots. Yeah. Lots of up and down.
Yeah. Sounds like it. So in your opinion, who should do this trek? Like, who is this for?
Anyone who loves hiking, but you have to like multi-day hikes because, like I said, you're up the next day and doing another 6 to 9 miles. And it's for someone who enjoys that kind of through hiking in which you do not have to, you know, camp and carry your food, which is the kind of stuff that I love, which is, you know, so it's really made for that kind of through hiking or kind of, in a way, hut to hut experience. Mm-hmm. But the huts are nice little guest houses or hotels, but they furnish all the food. So that's who I would say it's for, and definitely appropriate for someone who's done the Camino de Santiago. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for another kind of pilgrimage like that, in fact, they also have something called a dual pilgrimage status that you can get.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, oh my gosh. You're so special. That's you now, right?
Yeah, technically it is.
Wow.
I didn't go through all the steps to actually physically get the status, but I know that I did it.
Yeah.
So,
and you all now know as well.
So. Yes.
Sherry Ott, dual status pilgrim.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, for people who want that, it's perfect for them, obviously. Mm-hmm. So that's what those women that I met along the way were working on too. So they were doing this and they were going to have to turn around and go do the Camino. So.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. We should probably mention this was luggage supported, correct? So you just had a day pack with you?
Yes. But they do have a luggage service that they, meaning not Oku. Well, I think Oku does. Actually, Oku does have an option when you sign up with them. You could have your luggage moved, I think, daily, but I'm not positive if it's daily or every other day or if it takes 2 days. Or throughout Japan, there's these luggage services that you can move your luggage all the time. And it's super easy and it's very reasonable. But the thing is that they require 2 days to get there. So it wasn't something that I could like have my bigger bag moved to each place every night and then show up and it was there. It was, you had to plan a little bit ahead.
Okay.
So like what Oku had recommended, and this is pretty much what I followed, was, you know, I was there in Japan for 3 weeks. This was 1 week of it. So I had a much bigger bag. And before I even came down to the Kamanu Kodo, I shipped that bigger bag of stuff that wasn't hiking oriented onto my hotel for after the Kamanu Kodo.
Okay.
So I didn't have to worry about any of that. So I just took hiking stuff. And then even within that, I had another bag that I kind of shipped to the middle and then to the end of stuff that I didn't need on the trail, but stuff that I wanted access to in
like
the middle
halfway
of the
through.
Trail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So that was like more snacks or clean clothes or whatever. Yeah. So the idea is, yes, just take a day pack. However, I had to take something a little bit bigger than a day pack. I took more weight than what I wanted because I had a camera and a bunch of camera gear and I had a laptop I was carrying with me.
Oh, man. I hate traveling, hiking with a laptop.
Being a blogger, I know.
But
it did allow me to get everything up real time for the most part. So, but the other thing to know is that you could, you know, if you're not doing what I'm doing, carrying a laptop and doing photography, it would be very easy to do it with the laptop or with a day pack. And also every hotel that you go to or even guest house will offer you, you're going to wear slippers inside. So you don't need another pair of, you know, shoes.
Yeah. That's good.
Like normally. Yeah. You can just take your hiking boots. You do not need pajamas even because they give you little robes and most of them have these called yukatas and you're actually, you're supposed to like walk around in the yukata in a ryokan. So Like you get in, I would like peel off my gross, sweaty stuff, put it, you know, in the sink and start like washing it and hang it to dry. And then I just put on my yukata and my slippers. And then you go to dinner in the yukata.
Oh my gosh, stop it.
The breakfast, you walk around town sometimes in them. That I didn't get that crazy because I'm like, no. But definitely dinner and stuff. And it's funny because you feel really weird walking down there, but everyone's eating dinner at a table in their little robe.
This sounds like me. I think I need to go. Robes are one of my guilty pleasures. I love robes.
Oh, you will like it. And then they have shampoo. They even, every place I went, and this is throughout Japan, has shampoo and a toothbrush and toothpaste and a washcloth.
What?
Yeah.
What? So honestly, you don't need to bring hardly anything. Yeah.
Deodorant.
Deodorant. Yeah. Camera. Like your one change of clothes, your layers for wet weather. And that's pretty much it. Wow.
And so you can get away with a day pack and then just a little bit of planning with the luggage service.
Yeah.
And it works really well. Yeah.
So which exact, like what was the exact route that you did? Can you tell us?
So the most popular route is the Nakahachi route. And that's the one that will take you to two of the three temples via the trails. And then the third one, it was unclear to me if you could actually get there via a trail. If you could, it must be really hard because Oku doesn't really offer that as an option. And I never heard of people doing it either. So I don't know. But you finish, otherwise you finish at the second temple. You take a bus down normally and stay in the little seaside town there. And then you can take a train to the next temple.
Okay. And this was a 5-day part of your 3 weeks in Japan, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I did this walk with a monk one day, which wasn't really a part of the trail, but it talk about like, that was a good thing to do to really learn a lot more about the spirituality of the Japanese and the woods and how this all works. So he was great for that as, you know, just understanding the religion. Cause it's very hard to kind of wrap your head around it. I think, the mix of the Shinto and Buddhism. So that was a good thing to do. And I think Oku offers that as one of your, you know, side things you can do.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you find that and where did you do it? Like which day was that?
It was in the town of Honggu, which is a cute little town. That was where I stayed in an onsen by the river. And yeah, so that was just one of the things they offered there. They normally, I think in some of the towns like Honggu and maybe another one or two, they offer a couple of like more cultural immersion type things. One of these things was walking with a monk. I think they do some like paper making and stuff like that too. So if you wanted, my original thought was I'm like, oh, you know what? I want a day off, you know, to rest my knees and so on. So I thought I had built that in, but then I ended up doing this hiking with a monk, which was another 6 miles and it wasn't easy. So, so I didn't actually get a day off, but you could do it and go like make paper or whatever other options they have. It's that part's kind of nice, but yeah, he was really great because he spoke great English. What was his name? Katsumi. And he was like the coolest monk I've ever met. I think he actually even cursed once. probably shouldn't say that, but he did. He was awesome. But this sect, basically, of being a monk in this, it's called a Yamaguchi monk. They can be regular people. So like he actually owned a cafe and he's a licensed like mountain guide and whitewater rafter and kayaker. So he's like a big adventure guy. And he also studied for 6 years to be a Yamabushi monk.
Wow.
And those monks actually specialize in kind of hiking through the mountains. That's how they do a lot of their, praying and spirituality purification, all that stuff is part of their training. And it's always walking through the mountains. They do these epic treks. So he was really interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool, like, extra experience.
Yeah, because he would also, we stopped at all those OGs and he would either chant, you know, and or pray. The chanting was really cool to even see. And he would explain all this different stuff about the OGs. And so that's where I learned a lot of stuff.
There you go. That is exactly what I mean about the absence of a guide. You just see the little house, you see the stamp and you move on and put him in the picture and everything changes. Yeah.
Totally.
That's really cool. Man,
it was neat. So yeah, if you can spend the extra day doing that, I would highly suggest that because you get so much more knowledge and it's just a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool. Good advice. So, well, this has been awesome. All of this information. And you know what? Every time that I do these things, it's like, I can't help but add it to my list. I'm like, I've just been in Japan for the last 45, 50 minutes. You know, I'm like, I need to see this. I need to experience this. I want to eat that food and talk to that person. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
So thanks, Sherry. Now I have to go.
Yeah, you do. Well, and I went 12 years ago as a part of my initial career break travels that kind of started me on this whole road to travel blogging. I went to Japan as my last country and I was only in Tokyo for 4 days and I was fascinated with it. But ever since then, I've been wanting to get back because it was so different. And once I heard that they had this Kumano Kodo, there's also another pilgrimage there called the Shikoku temples. I've been wanting to get back ever since. And it was great. I was so happy to be able to spend extra time there and spend a whole 3 weeks and really dig into the country because it's worth it.
And now that you've done the Kumano Kodo, what was your feeling about that? How do you feel about having accomplished that?
I want more. I loved it. I really did. I loved it. It felt great to be able to be out doing daily hiking again and being in the woods and being so alone at points where you just, you know, you're just sitting there and you're listening to the wind through the trees and the bugs and it is very, very therapeutic to me. For me, I would have liked to even go longer probably and either do some of their other hikes because some of the other ones are longer or other, you know, I know Oku offers a few different hikes throughout Japan, like these multi-day hikes. Because I also feel like when you're doing through hiking, like something like the Camino, it normally takes about a week for your body to go, oh, this is what we're doing. We're eating and walking and sleeping. Okay, got it.
And
you get into this pattern. And I think that is one thing about the Camino that you can kind of really get into this state of, I don't know, meditation. It was a little bit harder to get there in just the 5 days I was on the trail. And you have to concentrate so much more on the trail. So I would have liked longer. So, you know, next time I want to do more.
Ooh, maybe we can go together. That would be fun. There's an idea. Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah.
It is. Oh my God. I was sad leaving there after three weeks. And I woke up this morning thinking about my miso soup and it is, it's such a beautiful countryside. Just all of Japan. And they've got giant mountains, not down in the Kii Peninsula. I want to say the highest altitude was, oh gosh, it hovered around 5,000 feet probably at the most. But you go up to other parts and where I traveled in some other areas and they call them the Japanese Alps. And those were like 10,000 foot mountains and they still had snow on them. And I met some people who were trekking up there and I'm like, oh, now I want to go up there. It's a beautiful place for adventure travel. Really is.
Well, I'm going to have to make it there someday.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate you sharing so much about it. I feel like that's going to be like this episode is going to be such a stepping stone, I think, for people to get there.
I hope so.
Yeah. And so you're going to be publishing about this.
Yes.
Where can people find all of that?
Oh, thank you. They can find it at otsworld.com. So Ott is my last name, if you haven't figured that one out. And so it's just otsworld, O-T-T-S, world.com. And I'll probably be writing about it over the next month or so. And what I tend to do on these through hikes that I cover is I'll do some kind of, you know, kind of more personal narrative about it, but then also give a kind of an FAQ document with everything about where to stay, how to prepare, what gear should you take, all of that based on my experience there. So that will all be there. And I suppose I can note that I did the Camino de Santiago 7 years ago over the course of 5 weeks. And ever since then, I've written extensively about that. But ever since then, I have been on a quest to find other things like it. So one of the things that I kind of focus on my blog is through hiking, like the Camino de Santiago. So I have a bunch of different ones on there. The St. Olav Ways, which is up in Norway, the Lykean Way, which is in Turkey, the Appalachian, or not the Appalachian Trail, I'm sorry, the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal. So the W, like you mentioned, down in Patagonia. So yeah, so if you're a thru hiker, you know, that doesn't like to carry a tent and all your food, I have a lot of different options.
Yay. I feel like we need like 5 more episodes now to talk about all this.
Yes.
Around the world with Sherry. Man.
Oh, well, I've been at it for a very long time. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, you guys have one-stop shop, all the resources at otsworld.com. Yeah. And you're on Instagram too at otsworld. Same thing.
Yep.
So yeah, her photos are up right now. You guys can go check those out if you want, but yay. So, okay. Well, thank you, Sherry, so much. Is there anything else that you want to add before we go?
No, I don't think so. I've got some other good hikes coming up this year. So yeah, definitely check out the blog, check out Instagram. I'm doing a lot of hiking and traveling this year. So.
Yay. That's my favorite.
And, you know, say hiking hi.
Traveling. Yeah. Sherry's really nice. We actually are friends in person as well.
Hey.
Yeah. Yay. We run into each other here and there across the world. It's good times.
Oh. You know, one thing I should say, I always forget this, is much like you running trips to Patagonia, last year I started running trips to Ireland. And so I have an Ireland hiking trip coming up in October.
There you go.
And I still have a few spots open on it.
Cool.
So check if you ever wanted to go to Ireland and hike in a off the beaten path place, I've got it for you. And we do photography. I teach some photography along the way. A lot of local experiences in an area that is not well touristed at all, but is beautiful.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I will be seeing you in Sweden, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And yes, also in Denver, like next week for OR, which is exciting.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Yay. All right, cool. Well, thank you again for your time. Thank you so much. This has been awesome. And I'm kind of serious about those other episodes. So we'll have to see what we can do about those other hikes you've done. But no, for now, thank you so much. And it's been great having you.
Yes, and let's go to Japan.
Woohoo, I want to. Let's do it. Okay. All right. Bye, Sherry.
Bye.
Okay, who wants to go to Japan now? I know you're out there. I know it's happening to you too. I know it's only a matter of time before I end up going there myself. I can't believe I haven't been yet. So Sherry mentioned 2 things after we stopped recording. I'm going to share those right now. One was that while this has nothing to do with safety, she does recommend going to Japan as a buddy trip. Like, bring your buddy, go with somebody, simply because she said, and I quote, "There's just so much crazy stuff. You just need someone else to witness it all with you." And if you've ever seen the Instagram photos from your friends who go to Japan and meet Pikachu mascots on the streets, you might understand that suggestion. So that's one thing. She said, go with a buddy. And she also said that the Kamano Kodo is not something that you can set up yourself. You will end up on too many Japanese websites and not be able to work your way through the logistics. So it's best to book it through a company. And I did mention at the beginning of the show that I have something special for you, just for you. You heard us mention a company called Oku Japan several times throughout this episode. They are the ones Sherry traveled with. They are the ones my brother and Chelsea booked their honeymoon through. And if you want to book with them when you go to Japan, I have a 5% discount for you. Yay! So all you have to do is use the promo code Jackie5. I hope you know how to spell my name. J-A-C-K-I-E 5. The number 5. Jackie5. To save 5% on any booking with Oku Japan. That's O-K-U. Oku Japan. And you can find them at okujapan.com. When you book, you can just put the promo code in the notes section to make sure that they see it so you can get your discount. So pretty cool, hey? Huge thank you to Oku Japan for hooking us up with that. I can't wait to hear about your experiences in Japan if and when you decide to go. And as always, tell me about it if you do. You can find me on Instagram at TravelingJackie. Let me know if you decide to go. I will celebrate that decision with you. All right. I think that's it for today. Hope you guys enjoyed that overview of the Kimono Kodo. First time we've talked about Japan on this podcast, which is pretty exciting. And stay tuned because we have a mini world tour coming up in the next episode. We just have one more that falls under this series of hiking and long distance trekking, etc. And it's a really good one. So I will see you guys in the next episode. Until then, safe travels.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.